Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Bordeaux Wines. Red, white, rosé, there's a reasonably priced wine for everyone and for every occasion. For more information, visit bordeaux.com/US. Today's program is brought to you by Campari. For more information, visit campari.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and we're going to get right into it today because I am so excited to have this guest on the show. We have Elisabetta Foridori of Foridori Winery in the Trentino area, northern Italy, in the foothills of the Dolomites. She makes some of Italy's and really truly the world's most soulful, fascinating, distinctive wines. Every wine list I have ever put together has always had not one, but multiple Foridori wines on the list. I am so in love with the wines, and the person really informs how great these wines are. Elisabetta, welcome to In the Drink. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Che buongiorno.
Can you, for people who are not familiar with Trentino, can you tell us what makes your area special and give us a paint a picture? I've seen pictures, I haven't actually visited, but of you standing with the raw mountains in the background. What is it like there?
Yeah, it's so very, I mean, we are in the middle of the Dolomites, so you have the influence of this beautiful mountain, and of course there is a huge energy around that, and working there is just working with your earth, with your soil, with your terroir, and we always surrounded with mountain, which make a huge influence also in your, I mean, way to thinking, and this is a presence, a very concrete and nice presence.
Yeah,
these rocks.
You took over the winery from a very, very early age, and can you talk about what those early days were like?
It was middle in the 80s. I was 19, between 19 and 20, and fortunately, my father died very young, so I had to go over this farm, which was, middle in this small region, and we grow only local variety, mainly Teroldego and Nuziola. So it was like, you know, making wine for the village, and we had Litro, and we go around into the bar to deliver the wine, a lot of Damigiana, but always the most the best vineyard we fill up also in we say 750 in a bottle, and at one point it was important to go out and to put the message outside this small Trentino, and that I started to travel in the winter, mostly traveling through France and learning about a different viticulture, and then trying to go out with my Teroldego in the world. So that happened. It took a lot of time. So,
yes. But you said through your travels that Teroldego is a great grape, a distinctive grape, and it should be, people around the world should appreciate it. It shouldn't just be a local grape.
Yeah, it's one of the 500 Italian varietals, mm-hmm. So it's something which is related to this country with this special alluvial soil. It's a variety who needs to be surrounded with mountain, need to have the roots into sandy and stony soil. And in fact, like fresh climate. That is very important for this variety, like Nojola in another way.
Yeah. Were there, what was something that happened in those early years that gave you encouragement that said, I should be, this is the right work, I have, something is validating why I'm going out and telling the story of
Well, it
Throbbing.
Was like a vision and to follow a passion, which was the heritage of my family. And it was pure instinct because, in fact, in this, I mean, in the 90s, you know, all the international variety came into Italian wine varieties, scenario. It was really against the main current at that time. So I think it was 2 points. This instinct, which is probably related to the conserving on the earth and conserving of my heritage, which is also related to be, I mean, to the female part of the character. And the father of my children, Reiner Zirok, always helped me to start to see how the selection of the biodiversity on one variety is very important. So I started very early to make mass selection, that means to keep alive the biodiversity of the variety, in that case the Roldego. And this was like a mission, you know. It was a mission that I took over, and it was my energy.
You had a clear vision from an early age. That's incredible. I mean, you mentioned the female side of it. Did you find that being a female winemaker was maybe more challenging or gave you some advantages in some sort of way? What was it like? Because I don't think there were very many when you started in Italy, at least.
I think the female instinct is more related to conserving and protect and to, like, you know, something very round, very, very close to the earth. But it's not properly related to a woman. It could be also, it's our part. We have both parts inside, the female and the male part. So if you develop very well this part, it's helping you to understand better the nature, the cycle of life, and to be closer to an holistic point of view to work. This is something which I think is very important. But to be a woman was, I also have a part of technical study, so I'm an oenologist, I study viticulture, that helped very well, not to be, you know, just only a woman in the wine world that is going around and trying to save a variety. I was something, well, I am, I think, good related also with the science in a good way, that helped very well, very much, of course.
It's hard to ignore someone who has a clear vision and also the technical expertise to back it up, regardless of who you are.
Yes, it helps to have the two vision. I mean, I'm in the last 15 years, I'm almost aware, I mean, far away from the technology in the bad point of view. But the science is something very important. So even working biodynamic as we do is something which, Rudolf Steiner spoke about a science in a spiritual way to work the soil and to be into the nature. So it's not something which is in the air, but this is related to cycle, to understanding, to be there 100%, observing, listening, and then take decision. That makes sense, and that helps a lot to work in the proper way.
So is it fair to say that biology is more important for a winemaker to know than chemistry?
Of course, yes. Understanding, I mean, how the life is working, it helps to, of course, also take decision. And on the other side, you have to work with the instinct, with the fine signal which the natural gives to you to take decision. All this together, it's the best way for me to approach agriculture, which is not natural. Agriculture is not something naturally. The forest is something naturally. But our vision is to go closer, as much as closer to a forest. which is the best balance that you have in between vegetal and plants together. So it's a huge community of plants that make everything in balance and healthier.
Plants and animals as well.
Of course, animals is so they are very important. So the forest is really our example.
But now there's been an evolution in your philosophy over the years. You've integrated organic viticulture and then biodynamic, and with vinification you've introduced, and I think if a seminar that we did a few weeks ago is any indication, you have a true passion for the use of amphora and in winemaking. What have been the factors that have contributed to your change and involvement when it comes to your philosophy?
This came in a very simple way in the late 90s when my feeling was I'm not connected with what I'm doing. Everything went well. We had a successful winery. The wine was around the world. But the connection was, it was not there. So I stopped it, really. It takes some time to think about. And, it's a mix of relationship, visiting people which inspire me a lot, like Mark Reidenbach, which is it's a person who started biodynamic in Elsass in the early 80s, and exchanging experience and broke me through a way which was the biodynamic, which is one of the way make like a rebirthing of the fertility of the soil, mm-hmm. which is our most important things to do, because as you know, the most part of the soil on the earth, they are dead because of the chemical, and to go back to the fertility is not so easy. So in fact, you have to use fertilizing on this dead soil, or to find a different way to bring back the life into the soil. And this is, of course, with the idea of the biodynamic preparation and the approach to agriculture, which Rudolf Steiner teaches to us. It's a fantastic way, which involves yourself and your relationship with what you are doing. And that was a big inspiration. And it's at some point, it was the part which I miss it. This part, which is inconsistent, which is more theoretical, spiritual, and then make. This was also what I tried to find out in this way, on this different way.
And when you made these changes, you noticed a big change in yourself as well, and more connection. It happened. Was it immediate?
You need to change. Yes.
Was it immediate, or did it happen over time for you to be more connected?
It was like the little seeds inside mm-hmm. me, and then the plants grow and grow, and even now there is every day discovering a different part of myself and a part of the making, not only making wine. We are in the meantime, we have cow, we are starting to make vegetables. So it's you automatically go to a concept, not to the winery, but it's a farm. And that's this daily discovery of how the farmer are lucky, because they have a huge opportunity to discover himself through a wonderful job, mm-hmm. which is the relationship with the plants or the animal. This is a confrontation, exchange, everyday exchange. It makes life alive.
And when you've made these changes, what did you notice was happening in the vineyard to the soil and to the plants? How did they change?
They change very even slowly, because you need time to bring back the fertility. To you see how plants are coming back, insects are coming back, the vine are, they are in a balance. And this balance is, of course, a balance of the fruit, which allow you to make the big change, this big transformation, which is the death and rebirth, which is the fermentation, in a completely different way. Because at one point, you trust your grape. Mm-hmm. And when you trust your grape, you change also the way to make wine, because wine is not something which is naturally happen. It's something which is related to what we want to do. So mm-hmm. the human being is in the pole position there.
There has to be some interaction. You can't say you do nothing because that would be a lie. It wouldn't be wine anymore.
Do nothing is not possible, of course.
It's lazy.
But be beside and let things happen with confidence. Mm-hmm. Then the life, it's the reaction always normally goes in a very good way.
Yeah. It's almost we can do certain mechanical things, but not any chemical things to the vineyard. You have to prune, you have to help
yes,
out so long.
It's like to take care of this garden, mm-hmm. which is almost mm-hmm. a garden because we have a lot of wild plants. We plant trees all over. We try to keep our vineyard as in a condition of diversity, which is not easy in the mountain because we have very tiny space, but it's possible. And see that this it works very well, and it's always improving every year. See how the plant can go through this also very difficult climate every year. Mm-hmm. It's something which say to me, yes, you are on the right way.
Well, what I love about your wines is that every time I taste them, I think they're better than the last. I've always been a fan, and from the beginning, I feel like every year you just keep getting better and more interesting, and how you really express the vintage, and that we just did a tasting of many different vintages, and how they were all so different. And to me, that's a great thing because it shouldn't taste the same every year.
Oh no! Of course, if you work in this way, you have the purity and the truth of the message of the terroir, which is what we want to reach. So to put in the bottle our message in a true way, in a healthy way, in a way which can at some point, it's not only which is going to your stomach, but this is going to your head and your soul. I mean, it's going in a very abstract dimension. And I think the improving is related on this perception is related to a growing the plant is free and is in balance, so the plant express herself in the best way.
Yeah. All right, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more of Elisabetta Foradori on In the Drink.
Bordeaux is one of the most reputable and well-known wine regions in the world. While many are familiar with its legendary first growths, there is so much more to discover. Bordeaux offers a dynamic and diverse range of wines, different styles, different colors, and different price points. Did you know that Bordeaux produces crisp, refreshing whites? Or that many of its outstanding reds can be opened now and don't need years aging? Or that it's really easy to find a great bottle of Bordeaux for under $20? With such a diverse offering, Bordeaux wines can pair with a huge mix of contemporary foods and cuisines. Bordeaux wines, red, white, rosé, there's a wine for everyone. For more information, visit bordeaux.com/US.
When you talk about Campari, one of the first things that comes to mind is the inimitable and ubiquitous Negroni cocktail, a favorite of Heritage Radio Networks. Joe Campanelli, host of In the Drink on Heritage Radio, talks about the interesting history of the Negroni cocktail.
The classic Milano Torino, which is better known as the Americano cocktail, which is Campari, good red vermouth. Use good red vermouth like Carpano Antica formula, Contrado, Cocchi Vermouth Torino, one of those, and soda water. Then later on in its history was transformed into the Negroni, which substituted good gin for the soda water, something a little bit stronger. Count Negroni spent many years traveling the Midwest, the Southwest of the United States, found a penchant for strong drinks, and later went to London where he started to like his gin. Brought that all back to his favorite bar in Florence and said, I'll take one of those Americano cocktails, but make it stronger, make mine with gin. And such was birthed the Negroni cocktail. And now it's really popular. I find that people are asking for Negronis with agave-based spirits, mezcal or tequila Negronis, especially mezcal, a little more popular. So mezcal Negronis are really delicious.
Experiment with your own Negroni recipe and enjoy it with Campari for a perfect cocktail creation. For more information, visit Campari.com.
Please enjoy responsibly.
All right, we are back on In the Drink with Elisabetta Foridori. Elisabetta was talking about the evolution of her wines and her philosophy, and how she's integrated a ton of biodynamic practices into the viticulture. And I imagine that the wines have also evolved over the years as you've integrated these practices. Was there a time where you felt, I am now doing things the way that I want them to be, and the wines are tasting the way that I would like them to taste as well?
I can't say you never reach a point, because you are always you have to find yourself in this wine, and the beautiful things that you never find yourself. Oh, this wine, they never tell you really where they are. So it's always an evolution. And I am in a point which I feel so free and so lucky and so relaxed in this idea, which it's, I take what they have to say to me and not what I want to reach. And now my son Emilio is also helping me in the wine, so there is new energy, there is another point of view, it seems, I mean, another feeling, and so it's be two and see that with two different points. I mean, it's very interesting. So it's a standing evolution.
Yes.
You never end, which is also nice.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And what new ideas has he brought, or is he still very much learning from you?
Oh, he learn in the practice. So we share our value and vision of the winery, which is the most important thing. And then how each of us reach this point, this is,
Is this every
choice.
Italian mother's dream to have the son working with
it? I don't know. It's, of course, on one side, I feel lucky because we have four children. It seems some of those are interesting to be farmer. So you feel, yes, something can go in the future. On the other side, because I feel so lucky and so full of gifts of the natural, I also say, well, I've done what I like it. I still do something like this. It's not a question of heritage. Mm-hmm. It's a question of give or improve or help talent to go in this direction. And for us, it's another important thing and point is to our door are open to every young people which want to come and to learn, because we have to multiply this message. So if you have the opportunity to come, to learn, to practice, it's the best way. And this is our mission now. Because we had a great experience, we still have a great experience, and we have to share this experience with young people.
Yes. Is it true Arianna Occhipinti came and studied with you for some time as well? Or no?
No, Arianna is, it's related to one of my best friends, which is Giusto Occhipinti.
Which is Giusto, yes.
And I think Arianna works to Frank Cornelis Winery before.
Okay.
And even with Elena Pantaleone. And she's a great woman, which brings the same message very far away from me. I am more or less in Austria, and she is close to Africa. So, but this is a very, this message going through all the distance.
But this it does remind me, though, your friend Giusto Occhipinti is very well known for his biodynamic winemaking in Sicily, but also for introducing the amphora, or reintroducing amphora back to Sicilian winemaking. And I know that this is something that you've been very interested in lately, and since 2009 have been making wine in amphora. Can you tell me about how you got interested in making wine in this manner, and what your experience has been like?
Yes, Giusto is a good friend, and we share for now 30 years about our experience. And he gave me this gift to one point in my life to say, Ellie, try the tinaja, so try the you have to try this amphora, this clay pot. So it was 2008 when I was trying to find out the best container to ferment in my nosiola, because I wanted to ferment on the skin. And I always had, I mean, through the Rudolf Steiner teaching this in my head, the clay, as Steiner said, is a great connector of different polarity. And through this different polarity, clay is able to transfer message in a very pure way. In fact, clay is something which clean everything and transfer to another dimension. So the work with the clay is, for me, the amphora, is a consequence of this way of working outside. So if you are able to let express your terroir, the spirit of your terroir, and then the transfer of the spirit into wine, into the clay, I think is the best way to do this huge transformation. So clay is a symbol of everything. The tinaja is a symbol of the earth, of the air, of the heat, of the... I mean, of the water, because all these elements are into this congenital.
And to me, it was so brave for you to do this, to think you have success doing what you're doing and people like the wines, but now I'm going to change it in a drastic way almost. And what was that experience for you like? Was it also similar to when you started and you're like, ah, this is my clear vision, or did you second guess it a little bit in the beginning years?
It was pure instinct, in fact, no business plan or thinking about what's going to happen. And I think the most important thing is and was that I was so involved and so truly inside that I was transmitting what I am now doing, the truth. So this is what I am now. I was different. Now I'm like this. And in a good way, la verità. So the truth goes through everything. And it was not easy because all the market changed, but it was so important that it really changed my life.
The wines are outstanding too. So you have the Toraldego, Scarzone, and Moray in Amphora, and the Nozziola. We'll be doing Manzoni Bianco in Amphora as well?
No, Manzoni Bianco is fermented on the skin, but in concrete. We make now a Pinot Grigio in Amphora, which is called Fuori Pista, and which is main out of track, because a very different Pinot Grigio when the old Pinot Grigio in my region. And the vintage, which is coming now, is 15. We started with 14, and it's also a huge experience how this variety can express itself.
Incredible.
Yes.
Yeah, Pinot Grigio is a grape of that region, really. It's been there for a long time, right?
Yes, a long time. And then, unfortunately, not so considered as a quality variety. Right. So there are a million of bottles of Pinot Grigio around. But, of course, this is not what we want to do. It's just to focus how the Pinot Grigio can express the true character.
And what about Granato at this point? Are you continuing the same?
Granato is the wine which I'm more relating, in fact, because this is the wine which permitted me, starting from vintage 86, to go out in the world. And Granato is made from the three oldest vineyards of the winery, which are three more than 80 years old pergola, very old vine, which is the symbol of the farming in the past, because under this, the pergola is going very high and the fruit are hanging, but downstairs we make the grass for our cow, we make vegetable. It's a unit for surviving, which the former farmer used, because they could make everything with a very small piece of land. They could survive.
Well, it's amazing to think that this way that was just a sustenance way now is able to make, especially grapes with such age, an outstanding, soulful, really complex, age-worthy wine in the pergola is kind of a crazy thing to think.
Because there is a balance inside, and this I mean, not monocultura, which is a pergola in this way, with all the herbs, the vegetable, the animal, makes a balance, really a balance. And this is also a way to let the plant express in a free way, because you have an interaction of many different plants. Mm-hmm. And because we need exchange, the plant, with a lot of exchange in the, through the roots and through the fungi, the mycorrhiza, is a plant who can express deeply the message through the fruit and the wine of the place where it's growing.
Yeah. And now, when you started, how many people were bottling Taraldego, and now how many people are bottling, and how many people are doing a conscientious good farming as well?
It's slowly improving. Yeah. There are about 10 different small wineries which are bottling Taraldego. We are now 4 biodynamic winery, not wine, I mean wine grower. And it's taking slow, but in the last 2-3 years, a lot of young people asked to come and work. This is a good sign. I think they are curious about, they want to experiment, they want to put the hand in this, I mean, you know, a little bit different way to make agriculture. And that's make me very, very happy.
Well, I'll tell you, drinking your wines makes me very, very happy. Elisabetta, it's been such a pleasure to have you on In the Drink. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and welcome to the Dolomites.
We should all go. It's an In the Drink trip to the Dolomites. Maybe we'll tape an episode from there. I am coming to the Dolomites. I'd love to visit you.
You're welcome.
If you see Foradori wines, buy them. They are fantastic. They are some of the most soulful, delicious, outstanding wines and a great value. I love Foradori wines. Go get them. Thank you so much to Pierre, who's engineered this show, Aaron Fairbanks from Heritage Radio Network, our sponsored wines of Bordeaux, and to all of you for listening. This has been In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.